Hello, and welcome to MCNC Community Connect, a podcast where leaders and innovators regularly gather to discuss some of today's hottest technology topics and trends. I'm Tracy Doakes, President and CEO of MCNC. Today, I'm joined by colleagues at the North Carolina Telehealth Network Association, John Graham, President, and Jordan Rogers, Director of Relationship Marketing. I'm also pleased to welcome Ed Turlington and Drew Moritz, who are joining us from Brooks Pierce LLP in Raleigh. Welcome to the show. We have a lot to unpack, so let's get started. Today, we're diving into the world of legislative advocacy. What is it? Why is it important? And how can you get involved? Advocacy is the core of the legislative process, the mechanism through which we, the people, can influence the laws that govern us. It's about making your voice heard, educating decision makers, and building support for policies that matter. Effective advocacy can drive meaningful change, ensuring that legislation affects the needs and values of the people that it serves. North Carolina's broadband challenges today require bold strategies and even bolder action. Whether it's bridging the digital divide, accessing modern healthcare and telemedicine, or managing cyber threats, the power to shape our interconnected world lies in the ability to advocate for it within the legislative arena. So let's begin with the basics. Ed, what is legislative advocacy and why does it matter?
Oh, Tracy, well, thank you for this opportunity. Appreciate the important work MCNC and the Telehealth Network do. As I prepared for this podcast and thought about this question, I was led back to a non-technical conclusion. Legislative advocacy ain't rocket science. It's really the blocking and tackling of having a message and policy goal. You know, North Carolina law defines lobbying as influencing or attempting to influence legislative or executive action through direct or goodwill relationships. So it's literally defined in the law, but you don't really have to think about that law when you're doing advocacy. I've done this over the years. The biggest mistake, Tracy, I've made is going in with all kinds of information that I wanted to get out of my mouth before the other person could say a word. And what I really should do is do two things. Number one, what's the core thing I want to leave in terms of message? And then second of all, why does the other person care? So those are a few comments I would have.
Wow. Those are really, really good points. Drew, you know, tagging on to the fact that advocacy as it relates to the legislature ain't rocket science. Yeah. What are some ways that people can get involved?
Yeah, I think it's very basic. Technology has provided many opportunities to allow engagement from the public or at large. And so it's as simple as sending an email to a member. It's a phone call to the member's office. It is setting up meetings. I will build upon Ed's point is, you know, this is a relationship industry. You know, and advocacy is building relationships with legislators. And so if you have key relationships, letting your employer know, the government affairs team know that, hey, this person goes to, you know, is a neighbor. I went to college with this person. When I was with the Raleigh Chamber, I created a key contact program years ago. So I knew who I could reach out to and lean on whenever there was an issue that we wanted to make headway with the legislature. So it really is, there's multiple ways to engage. And again, building the relationship first is always critical.
And that's an excellent point. So for both of you who are highly experienced in this area, for someone who's never been involved in legislative advocacy before, it can seem really intimidating, especially Drew, as you talk about building these new relationships. What advice would you give to a first-time advocate, either one of you or both?
Yeah, Drew, why don't you go first?
I'll go first. Don't hesitate to ask for assistance. If you know that whether it's a employer trying to get a message to the legislators or it's an employee saying, hey, this is an issue that's important to us, don't hesitate to reach out. I've always said I'm happy to review any message before you hit send, because once you hit send, you cannot unwind that. And making sure that it's on message. And then also putting yourself in the perspective of the legislator by having that relationship and knowing that member, you know what motivates them. So understanding that that is going to be a critical piece in how they respond to your message. So making sure that someone takes a look at it, not to edit, not to say, no, you can't say this, but more of a line of, hey, we might be able to refine this. That could be more effective based on the fact that I know this member and what motivates them.
And Tracy, adding on to that, and MCNC is really good at this. The common conception of lobbying the North Carolina General Assembly is you've got to physically go to the legislative building. And yeah, that can be effective. But some of the best lobbying I've seen, and you do it with MCNC, is you say, hey, Mr. or Ms. Legislator, our network is in your district and facilitates education and telehealth. Meet us one day at the community college. And let us show you the impact we're having in your area. Also, my experience is legislators love to go see stuff and meet people in their district, whether it's an employer, a school, a healthcare entity, a nonprofit. So that's some of the best lobbying I see.
That's a very good point, Ed. You and I have known each other for quite some time, and you know I've been in and out of state government for about 20 years. So, very, very involved in advocating for my agency, for my administration, and you're spot on. It is about what matters to them and why would they care. Correction, Drew, technically speaking, you can unsend an email.
Above my pay grade.
It's not always easy to do, but you can certainly try. As we all know, this era of politics is truly unprecedented, at least in our minds, in its complexity and challenges. Pew Research Center recently noted that just 4% of US adults say the political system works well. Just let that sink in. 4%. Today's state and federal legislative affairs nuances require MCNC to be attentive and proactive to shifting circumstances and concerns. The key word here is proactive. The idea that we must dig the well before we are thirsty, not an easy task. Our efforts currently focus on three key priorities: relevance, influence, and action. Even in a chaotic political moment in our history, it's more important than ever to educate, mobilize, and be thought leaders in the context of broadband and networking technologies. We've got a unique opportunity and responsibility to help foster this positive change. So, John, from your perspective, why is enhancing advocacy from the NCTNA critical at this given moment for expanding and modernizing healthcare?
Well, let me jump back to Ed's Drew's comments. One, in terms of advocacy more generally, this is something Jordan and I have found that's been very important. In line with the idea of visiting a site, for example, what we've done predominantly in our meetings with legislators has been to tell them with stories about the lives and the experiences of our in our cases of our subscribers. And that's really where the rubber meets the road in terms of their legislation and funding and that sort of thing. And that's the kind of thing that appears to have a real impact on their decision making. So I would just throw that in too. In response to your question, I think, as you know, NCTNA is a broadband provider for healthcare organizations, and we've partnered with them as they have and continue to adopt new technologies. We've helped them during a period when there's been a rapid advance in the adoption of electronic health records. With the help of MCNC, we also have been at the forefront of connecting them to the Health Information Exchange, which allows healthcare providers to exchange patient information regardless of the electronic health records or regardless of their location. And of course, we've been a participant in the adoption of telehealth. And with COVID, of course, we saw a sea change with the adoption of telehealth, where we went from something that was a marginal application to one that's used as a regular part of care today. And so these are all important enhancements, but all of them are fundamentally influenced by legislation and policy. And so we want to make sure this kind of rate of adoption continues and that what has been accomplished so far doesn't fall back. To give you an example with regard to telehealth, a very large part of the expansion in the adoption of telehealth resulted from a waiver of restrictions on things like licensure and payment and things like that. And we want to make sure that those waivers at some point actually become permanent changes in our policy around the adoption of telehealth. And more broadly, or more specifically with regard to broadband, telehealth, of course, can't happen without good connectivity. And there are two major pieces of legislation and sources of funding that are going on today. One is called BEAD funding, which is led or funding that's intended to make our patients and more generally our residents provide them with the connectivity that they need. And then USF funding, which is important in terms of providing connectivity for our smaller healthcare providers. In both of those cases, we've been providing quite a bit of advocacy to encourage the completion of the BEAD program and the allocation of funding to our patients. And then we've been working on USF, which is in need of reform and is subject to a court ruling in the near future. And we want to make sure that that continues to provide support for our healthcare facilities.
Thank you, John. Very good point about telling the story. Ed and Drew remind us of that very thing every time we go speak with a legislator or legislative staff. Jordan, given your responsibility for developing relationships on behalf of NCTNA, what does this mean to you?
Well, I just want to start by saying, Tracy, thank you so much for having us here today. It really, as I was preparing for this, it is such a privilege and an honor just every day to be able to work with an organization like MCNC and to have a seat at this table. I really think we are living in a once in a generation opportunity kind of time right now with everything around broadband connectivity. So I wanted to start with that. And really building on what was perfectly teed up by Ed and Drew and John and yourself, you know, we are living in an age of fire hose of information every day. We're inundated, we're overwhelmed, overinformed to some degree, right? So relationships, I see them as really the currency of influence. They are everything to what we do. And when we talk about looking future forward or upstream, really, truly building a genuine relationship that's not transactional, but really genuine at its core with our members, our state partners, our legislators, you know, members of Congress, their staffers, their schedulers, every relationship. I think that really allows us to anticipate needs of our healthcare providers in North Carolina, whether we serve them or not. You know, we don't live in their day-to-day world. We live in our very small silo of broadband and, well, huge silo of broadband connectivity and healthcare access and sort of this telehealth world and federal funding around that. the relationship with our members and these partners allows us to have a doorway into the day-to-day challenges that they face. And when we have that look into their world, we start to almost become trendsetters of what are we advocating for? What should we start messaging around? What should we be prepared to be a voice for in regard to our providers? And I just think they're monumentally important for us when it comes to making measurable legislative changes. We're not lobbyists. We're a small, thank God, we have people like Ed and Drew that are very skilled at this, but we're just a small nonprofit organization trying to drive our mission forward to improve access to healthcare in North Carolina. And those relationships that we have with, especially schedulers and staffers of members of Congress, we have to earn their trust because they are gatekeepers of their boss, which is the key influencer. And I love what Drew said earlier. I've had to find little connecting points. Oh, we were in the same sorority in college. Or, oh, yeah, actually, the senator and I are both Mountaineers. Go App. Little points of connection that keep us fresh in their mind. And then I also try to find ways that I can connect the story that we're telling to the member or leader that we're talking to when we're trying to influence change or really help them understand the impact of whatever it is we're advocating for their constituents. So in short, whether it's with our members, MCNC, state partners, legislators, relationships are everything for us.
And it's so interesting, Jordan, because almost every time I talk to you, you have coined a new phrase that I have to add to, this long list, this currency of influence. And it may not be a new phrase, but it's certainly new to me when you talk about, what Drew said, this building these genuine relationships with anyone that can help move policies forward that we're interested in and we need to drive. Ed, you and I and Drew have talked quite a bit about BEAD funding. And for those listeners who may not know, it's Broadband Equity, Access, and Deployment Program. How important do you think from our conversations? How important do you think this is going to be to telemedicine going forward?
It's going to be very important. And just as perhaps as an aside, a few minutes ago, you cited this Pew study about very few people thinking that essentially government is working. For those who don't know, what John and Jordan and their organization do is a prime example of how government is working and literally saving lives. The Health Information Exchange knits together information. So when I see a specialist, my GP knows the results and sees the test in all in real time. And then second of all, as a result of COVID, we all learn more about the impact of telemedicine changing lives and us all being able to get quality health care in difficult circumstances. The BEAD funding, this federal BEAD funding, is another iteration of money that North Carolina is already benefiting from. Tracy, maybe a decade ago, under past leadership, and you were a part of this, broadband money began to flow into the state to build infrastructure. And then during COVID, we got hundreds of millions of dollars where providers and local governments took a partner to build out even more infrastructure. BEAD is yet, in my view, another power boost towards getting the information out there. And by the way, there's this Helene impact that needs to be addressed. So I would bet John and Jordan already have specific ideas about how that money can rebuild and upgrade infrastructure to deliver telemedicine, which then presents real life opportunities in 100 counties to show how people have better lives because of it.
Very, very good points and summary of what we've been doing in the state as it relates to broadband and the use of broadband funding to build this infrastructure you've been talking about that unfortunately ended up getting, much of it ended up getting destroyed during the hurricane Helene weather event that we're all still trying to build back. And we will be continuing to do that for quite some time. As John mentioned, what we're trying to do now, or what NCTNA is trying to do now, is advocating for adopting new policies, but more importantly, holding fast to existing ones so that they don't change. Drew, what's your perspective on how something like that works, right? When you're trying to, build new, but also hold on to what we already have, especially in the era that we're talking about right now.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was with the UNC system, there was a legislative mandate to do a study on optometrists across the state. And I just remember the takeaway from that was, while we have a lot of professionals within the state, they're not distributed where they need to be, which is why this is so important to be able to reach those areas that are underserved. It was really eye-opening for me as a non-health care professional. And at the time, I was more focused on the operations of the university and the 17 institutions. This is truly one of those areas where, technology is changing rapidly, and we cannot just leap to the future and forget about where we are currently. There's got to be the ongoing investment, but at the same time, these policies that we have in place now that allow us to reach these areas are going to be critical as we move forward.
Yes, I would agree. And I think we all, are leading to the same conclusion that reliable and affordable broadband is a cornerstone of economic growth, economic, education, healthcare, overall community development, and what I like to call, the creation of thriving communities. Strategic investments and upgrades in this digital infrastructure, along with accurate mapping, which is key here to identify where connectivity gaps exist, are hugely important, especially in the rural areas, which we all talk about really often. We know that healthcare demands very high standards. John, can you provide us with an overview of NCTNA and explain how you go above and beyond for both large providers and very small ones?
Sure, I'm glad to. And one of the things we often talk about is one of those phrases that Jordan coined called medical grade broadband. And since she coined it, I'm going to have her talk about that.
Thank you. That was one of the ones I first learned from her a few weeks ago, and I've been using that one too. Thank you for bringing that up,
Yeah,
John.
we've been using it all over the country. It works like a champ. But what I'm going to do instead is talk a little bit about how NCTNA is different from commercial providers and what that means in terms of what we can provide to our constituents as well and healthcare providers more broadly in North Carolina. So we are a nonprofit, and as such, we have a number of different priorities that don't necessarily coincide with maximizing profitability, and that gives us greater latitude in the kind of work that we do. We are As a nonprofit, we are led by our subscribers. The majority of our board members are subscribers, and so they provide us with direction. And one of the things that they have asked of us as we engaged in a strategic planning process was that we actually become advocates for healthcare broadband, not only for our healthcare providers, but for their patients as well. And so we have initiated a substantial advocacy effort on behalf of healthcare and telehealth in specific particular. One of our key, really the core of our mission as an organization, is to make sure that all North Carolinians, and particularly rural North Carolinians, have access to the highest quality healthcare. So that's really our endpoint, access to the highest quality healthcare, and wherever possible, access to that healthcare from their homes or from their local clinics instead of having to travel for specialty care to tertiary care centers. And in that role, with that in mind, and given our role as a nonprofit, we engage in advocacy for our rural patients in a number of ways. We established what we call the North Carolina Healthcare Broadband Coalition, which is a group of healthcare provider associations like the North Carolina Healthcare Association, the Health Directors Association, other groups like that, and other birds of a feather organizations like the Rural Center. And with them, we really focus on making sure that funding that's coming down through BEAD in particular, but it from other sources as well, is actually getting to the unserved, underserved, and overlooked patients and more broadly residents in rural North Carolina. We've done a number of things there. We're also interested once that access is, once they have access to the broadband, how can we maximize the healthcare impact? And so we're really looking at ways in which telehealth might be applied. And we've a number of projects where we're trying to expand telehealth access and expand the adoption of very effective modes of telehealth to really enhance the quality of care for these rural providers. So in a really important way, we can go beyond maximization of profits to really enhancing the quality or the degree of impact and the quality of impact that we make as a broadband provider for healthcare.
And John, we've talked about this phrase a lot with our rural communities and ensuring that we are addressing the needs of unserved, underserved, and overlooked. I think there's not enough being said about the overlooked portion of our communities that we really need to address in order for them to have quality health care.
Yeah, absolutely. With regard to overlook, really what we're talking about are folks that may be in a geographic location where they might gain access, but for various reasons, the healthcare provider or the broadband provider doesn't, as a commercial provider, for example, may not be able to connect someone that's right next door to someone else who has connectivity. And we want to make sure that those people get connected too.
Yes, exactly. So I will have our listeners who have been listening closely to listen even closer as Jordan talks about this medical grade network. Can you explain to us what that is?
Yes, certainly. And the phrase medical grade broadband or medical grade broadband network came to us when we were talking to one of our health systems that we serve a couple of years ago. And one of the chief information officers said, you really can't beat the connectivity that we get through NCTNA and MCNC's NCRN. It's almost like it's actually medical grade. And so that's where the phrase medical grade broadband came from. And medical grade broadband really refers to the entire system of connectivity for the healthcare provider organization as an anchor institution. It is a very secure, reliable, resilient system. All communications, connectivity, and telecommunications that connects all of the technology within the healthcare facility, so the EHR, the telehealth platforms from site to site of a healthcare organization, if they have multiple sites, medical devices, and beyond. We heard a joke that even some hospital doors are on the network. So it's incredibly important. It's more than just an internet connection. It's a direct fiber connection built and designed specifically for healthcare, so that whether a provider is in our capital city here or in a one-stoplight town, they enjoy that same caliber of high-quality connectivity that is totally different when it comes to the needs of a healthcare provider versus a local small business or residential site. And really, MCNC, I think, designed their network to accidentally be fantastic and perfect for medical-grade broadband. And when Tracy, you and I discussed this previously, if it's good enough for a healthcare facility or healthcare as an anchor institution, it's great for everyone else that gets to enjoy access to that network, your libraries, your schools, your community colleges, and more. It is important because in healthcare, connectivity is a matter and can be a matter of life or death. It is as important as the power or water to healthcare as an anchor institution.
And that's an interesting point. Even though you're joking about the doors being on the network, when you also think about things like HVAC, physical alarms for the building, many of those are on a network. And I'll just add, another component of this. That's where cybersecurity comes into play because of the fact that threat actors can gain access to networks through those systems that you really don't think about on a day-to-day from a day-to-day perspective.
Great.
Go
Sorry,
ahead.
Chris, I want to just interrupt for a second and add just a little bit to what Jordan was saying. We were having a conversation with one of our subscribers one day about the quality of the connectivity and why it was so important. And he made this observation, which I thought was really telling. He said, broadband, this is to paraphrase, but he said that broadband is even more important now to the physician than the scalpel is to the surgeon in terms of its fundamental importance in
Wow.
practice of healthcare.
Wow. That's a very poignant and important statement to know and understand. And just and for those who are listening, to understand how heavy that sounds when you think about the way that a doctor sees the network. And having worked at Duke Health before, I can tell you that that is exactly true. And doctors really can't do the work that they do without a strong network where a lot of their systems run on in order for them to do their work. We've talked quite a bit about the current environment and politics and how it's defined by a confluence of factors that make it unique in history. Merging advocacy with action directly addresses important issues and goes beyond merely raising awareness to actively participating in solutions. The beauty of combining advocacy and action lies in their tendency to reinforce each other. When you're actively involved in finding a solution, you gain firsthand experience and a deeper understanding of the issue. So, this approach can enhance your advocacy efforts, making them more informed and persuasive in transforming your passion around something into progress. Drew, from your lens, how can we inspire others to engage in both advocacy and action?
As I thought about this question, one thing that sticks to mind is, again, relationship. So, as an employer, you have to have the relationship with your employee to be able to communicate whenever there's a need. Employees, if you want to get engaged, again, it goes back to the relationship. Trace, we talk about this all the time. It's important to meet with legislators or have the conversation to get to know them before you have a need. So that the first time you walk into an office, you're not saying, "Hey, I'm Drew Moretz and I need you to do this." It really is, focusing on a longer term relationship that's not transactional. As it was mentioned earlier, if you want to engage, encourage you to get informed about the issue around that you're trying to really get informed about. There's more than one side. You may have heard about something on the radio that gets you ginned up that you want to go out and respond to a legislator who introduced a bill or what have you. Understand, do a little bit more research before you hit respond, fire off a message based on what you've heard on one telecast or what have you. So you understand there may be a personal reason why the legislator feels so strongly about an issue. And it's oftentimes reported out there. So you need to do a little digging sometimes. Also, the government affairs team is more than happy to provide insight into the motivation behind what is guiding an introduction of a bill or a decision that's being made. And also can guide you to how you might be able to be productive and help with the assist if it's something that is harmful, potentially harmful to the employer. Instead of firing off a nasty gram, calling member names, it's It truly is. So we're saying, here's how you constructively phrase what the message we're trying to get across. And you also need to know what the other side is likely saying to guide the member down that path. And how do you create a response to that so that your response is more powerful and more moving and more effective with the legislator than what the other side is trying to propose. And make sure your ask is reasonable. You certainly want to make sure that you're not asking someone to do something that is absolutely anathema to what they feel to their cores. You can weigh in with opposition, but understand that if this is a core belief, it truly is a core belief, and you might not be able to move them off that. However, there are others who you may be able to affect, and it may not feel as strongly about that one particular issue. And with the relationship that you have, you know what motivates them. By spending time with them outside of the legislative environment, outside of Raleigh, whenever you go meet with them, and you just talk to them. You're not talking about the issues because you just really want to build the relationship. So you know what motivates them, which helps you become a more effective advocate whenever it is time to actually weigh in on an issue, because sort of their priorities and their thought processes to get to their perspective. So again, there's a way to do this and a way to do it right. And that's, again, part of it is the relationships that you can build internally and externally.
And Drew, the point that you're making about educating yourself on policies and the actions that legislators are taking is just as important as those relationships. And so educating yourself not only on the action, but opposition to those actions, opposition to your view about those actions is important. Those existing relationships that you hopefully have built before you need to be able to reach out to a legislator are important. And then figuring out through your relationships, what are the motivations and why would a legislator want to move on a policy that you may think is not beneficial? These legislators are incredibly smart and they know, their constituents and they know what they feel is needed for their districts. And so being able to not just advocate, but build actionable plans that relate to those things. Am I right, Drew? Did I capture that?
Absolutely. And the members are being bombarded with messages, whether it's from constituents, whether it's from other lobbyists, they are being bombarded with messages, and you need to make sure that your argument sticks out and resonates. And as you know, Tracy, whenever you sit there and set a meeting with a legislator, you think it's 30 minutes. Sometimes it ends up being 5 because of a hastily called caucus or legislative meeting. So you have to be sharp as well. And concise, and be able to deliver a message, whether you're on an elevator ride with a member or walking across a bridge, or you get the full 30 minutes. You need to be able to be prepared to be persuasive and connect, with the member.
Yeah, with the amount of time that you have. That is one thing that both you and Ed have taught me is to always have a contingency plan. You might think you've got the 20 minutes, but if you've got two or five, you need to be able to condense it down to what really matters so that at least they're getting some idea of what you're advocating for. Ed, what are some other ways to participate to see tangible results?
Couple of things, Tracy, hit me. Number one, Drew and I, in our work, always try to share both sides. And so often what we will say is, we're here today representing X. We saw you introduced a bill on Y. Tell us about your interests. We'd like to be helpful. And then we make our advocacy points. And then we often say, no, you probably are going to hear the other side say X. And we respect that, but here's why we disagree with X. A second thing is, in a way, legislative advocacy can be kind of building in layers. So there might be an initial contact that doesn't resolve the issue. We usually do follow up in person and email, leaving behind information. I even, and this shocks people sometimes, I'll handwrite them a thank you note just for their time because almost nobody does that and they never get thanked. They all day long they're told how they're wrong. And so maybe even if I do think they're wrong, I can figure out a way to leave them in a good place. Another thing we think about is what other advocacy groups will care about this issue and would deliver a similar message, and how can I get them engaged if they're not already engaged? Is this a time that we could produce a joint letter or email that five groups that support the same thing sign onto? So you kind of layer it that way. And then also, as we know, legislative advocacy is a year-round business. It is not business only when we're in session. Kind of going back to earlier in the conversation, when John and Jordan get a legislator to a site where the HIE and telemedicine are working, that's worth me sitting in somebody's office for 100 hours. So
Yeah.
very much a year-round thing.
Yeah. That is so true. And I have heard you say this many times. How can we be helpful? Because that actually can drive your action plan. Yeah, if you know what it is they think you could be doing to help move something along or to give them more information. About a policy that helps them become more informed. And the thing about the handwritten notes, keep in mind, if you make an impact on them, they will also send you one. I've gotten a couple, a few in my time, and it stops you in your tracks when you get one of those. So I don't doubt that when they get one that's handwritten, it's not typed up in an email and sent to them. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but being unique and standing out is what you want to be able to do with legislators when you're trying to get a point across. So those are excellent gems that we can all pull from this. John and Jordan, as you've listened to Drew and Ed make their points, how does this type of advocacy relate to NCTNA?
Let me just start real quickly. I'm going to hand it over to Jordan. First of all, I want to say that Jordan is a master of handwritten notes and thank you notes. She is, I think she was born doing it, and she certainly does it as part of her advocacy activity. Secondly, in line with what Ed was talking about being helpful, Jordan and I meet with a lot of legislators from both sides of the aisles, from different committees, and so we get a sense of what the general thinking is and what the thinking is by specific legislators. We are able to pass that information along to other legislators and with the idea of being helpful and helping them understand what the sort of waterfront looks like and how they might want to position themselves. So that's one way in which it's possible to be helpful. And then this generally, when we advocate, we really keep our commitment to providing access to the best quality health care in mind. So we, and then all the telehealth and broadband related to, legislation and support related to that. So that informs not only our passion, but it informs the actual messaging that we make.
Tracy, yeah, this is a great question, and so much very well said by Drew, Ed, and John. I want to shout out John here. You know, John Graham and Dave Kirby founded NCTNA around 20 years ago, and because of a fantastic relationship with MCNC, it's become this force for connectivity and healthcare and change in North Carolina. And I just want to pick on John for a second. You know, the world is kind of crazy right now. Even politics aside, there's a lot going on everywhere, all the time. And like I said earlier, we're overly informed about it to a fault. And you know, I remember talking to John before the USF and the Universal Service Fund advocacy became a center point of our focus at NCTNA. What can we do? Is it the telehealth parity? Is it, you know, AI policy? What should we be focused on? And once we finally settled in on the Universal Service Fund, John started to say, How lucky are we to wake up every day and know that we have a channel that we can stay focused on to make a difference for our providers? And staying in that positive mindset of the Hill is for everyone. Your, state capitol building, that's for everybody. Like Ed and Drew were saying, anyone can request a meeting with a representative. If you're well informed, prepared for the meeting, well researched, you can really impact positive change. And kind of circling back to the question, how does advocacy relate to what we do at NCTNA? If we didn't advocate for the providers that we serve and their patients, then we'd just be a paperwork organization that leverages MCNC's network, which is a great network. And that would probably let us ride on coattails alone for a good long time, but we just really wouldn't be fulfilling our full opportunity we've been given here. And I think that it's important. Our providers are saving lives. So we can take that away from them, that space we can take, and stay almost delusionally optimistic about supporting them and making changes for them and just pushing forward. We leave the life saving to them. We'll take the connectivity and advocacy on our side.
Yeah, let me just add one piece in terms of how it works, how all the advocacy works. Jordan and I were up in D.C. Last week, and we were going to the Russell office building to see some legislators. Normally, when we do that, we go up to the door, and there's there when we just check in with security, and we go in and meet with the legislators. And just to reiterate what Ed said, anybody can go visit their legislators, and it's really, in many ways, their civic responsibility. But this time last week, given all the turmoil and the tremendous amount of change that's going on in DC or proposed change, there was a line out the door, around the corner, around the other corner. It took us probably about an hour and a half to get in. And that was a direct expression of the interest, the civic interest of Americans. And walking through the halls, that's what you saw. You saw that energy and that commitment to making positive change. And so I think it is encouraging, certainly encouraging during this time when there's a lot going on.
And so, John, you've said there's a lot going on, and Jordan said that the world is crazy right now. But, not only is there internet access, but look at all of the latest technology trends that are also out there that are being legislated in some form or another. There's been discussions within the state around AI governance. Cybersecurity is always an ongoing concern. Not just internet access for those rural communities that we're talking about, but what are they able to do with it? How are they able to participate in the digital economy and all of these things that we're talking about? MCNC has a long history of being proactive and meeting the leading edge needs of our community anchor institutions while adapting to the broader demands. But what we're seeing around the technology landscape is pretty incredible and very, very broad. So as we progress deeper into 2025, various critical technology policy areas are anticipated to attract significant attention from legislators at all levels of government. Ed, you made sure we got an invitation to the AI governance meeting with Representative Jake Johnson and Representative Zach Hawkins, where there was a large audience and we were listening and providing feedback on AI governance. So, what other important trends are you watching?
Well, I'll just kick off real quickly. I think cybersecurity is certainly one of them. As you know, healthcare is one of the industries where ransomware is a real issue, and having various kinds of security provisions like endpoint management and things like that is absolutely essential. We've seen a number of our largest systems be hit by various kinds of hack, like the Progress Software MOVEit hack and that sort of thing. All of that is something that we need to really pay attention to, and probably will be, well, I'm sure we'll be applying AI to that. We'll have to see whether the AI applications to enhance security can outpace the AI applications that are intended to hack security. So that's going to be an ongoing battle in a real sense. Also, as we talked about AI, as it happens, healthcare is the industry that most rapidly adopts AI. And so there are lots and lots of applications right now. One that of the most important right now is the automation of transcriptions during healthcare visits, and that's certainly been important. Another, I have a friend who's a radiologist, and I talked to her about using AI with radiology. She is certainly gung-ho about it. She says that AI can review images and discard any of the images that are not of interest to her from a diagnostic perspective, and she said it enhances her productivity by 50%. She also said that there are AI solutions that can actually see issues that the human eye cannot see. So there is the long-term question about to what degree will AI be a complement in enhancing productivity, and what degree will it actually replace workers? That's a major consideration that we want to look at over the longer term. So there are those, the whole idea of continuous monitoring, which can have a major impact on prevention and disease management. And disease management is where we manage chronic diseases like diabetes or hypertension through lifestyle changes. Continuous monitoring can have a major impact on the capacity of individuals to actually sustain the appropriate disease management protocol and really avoid complications. So the whole world of wearables and continuous monitoring is important. And then also the integration of augmented reality and virtual reality will be very important in terms of trainings and again in terms of telehealth services and things like that. There's the It's almost breathtaking what's going on. But I think ultimately broadband will be critical to the provision of all these services, as these technologies, which typically reside on distributed platforms, will be made available to healthcare providers around the world, really, and certainly around North Carolina.
As a technologist and engineer, just listening to you talk, it's completely overwhelming when you think about how AI and some of these newer emerging technologies are going to impact healthcare. I know Ed and Drew, as attorneys, in the back of your mind, you're probably also thinking about the liabilities and the policies that emerge, right? When you think about these things. And as you listen to John, what trends do you see emerging? What other trends do you see in the future?
Two things, Tracy, I would highlight. Anyone who is watching North Carolina state government, the governor, and the legislature, the most important thing that's going to happen the next 90 days is consideration and adoption of a state budget. And as you know, that funds transportation, healthcare, education. They'll earmark some of this federal broadband money, et cetera. The parallel to that, there are a number of policy bills that are at least being considered, such as relates to AI. And so we're watching those things and seeking to influence them. But one thing I want to flag before we finish, and everybody on this call, MCNC and the Telehealth Network are doing this, but it is so important to be thought leaders. It's so hard for public officials to look over the horizon because they just don't have time. And sometimes you do your most important thought leadership between legislative sessions. Bring them to one of your sites. Tracy, we've had people to MCNC or to our conferences, or go to their county and take them to the community college. I mean, we all know that there are things swirling around that I don't understand, but I know they're important. AI, Internet of Things, quantum computing, biotechnology, life science, drug development, drug testing. So look for those opportunities, especially between sessions, because if you put yourself in the position of the legislator, they want to do the right thing, but on any given day, they first see the realtors, then they see the educators, then they see us, then they see the environmentalists, then they see the tax, advocates, and it's really hard to keep all that straight. So thank you for being thought leaders and continue to do that, please.
Thank you. Drew, anything to add here?
And to build upon what Ed just said, I mean, remember, these legislators are part-time, hypothetically. They spend a lot of time in Raleigh, but they are designed to be a part-time legislature. Their pay is $13,900 a year. I've heard that from members reminding me of that. And most of them have one, maybe two staff. And so they need people like us to come in and share the most relevant information that they need to make an informed decision when they push that red or green button. And it's incumbent upon us to be there, be present, and to make sure that we're sharing the best information that we have at our available to us.
Thank you. So, Jordan, I didn't know if you had any final thoughts about this as we wrap up.
Well, specifically regarding key technology policy, I think that just a conversation that I'll be following closely is going to be around one, some of the technology preferences for the BEAD program. And I just want to follow that to make sure that legislators, especially at the federal level, understand the differences between the impact of BEAD and the Universal Service Fund, especially in that BEAD, is aimed at closing our digital divide through those technologies, and that USF is focused on, sustaining existing infrastructure and future investments to those rural communities and underserved and overlooked communities. And obviously, NCTNA and MCNC are working together to have a seat at the table, regarding the discussion around low Earth orbit satellites as a complement to fiber forward networks. As all this technology, these buzzwords kind of swirl around that we're talking about in healthcare, there's got to be infrastructure to support these technologies. And so, Tracy, you and I have had great conversations recently about looking future forward. How can we make sure we have networks built to use all these awesome new and kind of scary and intimidating technologies coming around? I mean, I just, again, I feel so lucky to be early in my career and just be a part of this with some of the greats like you guys on this call, and to be these thought leaders and really civil servants for those that we serve.
Thank you. Thank you. There are so many gems that I've gotten from this conversation. Usually I try to, a comment on a few, but they're just a tremendous amount in this podcast. I'll just pull out a few points. When we're talking about actionable advocacy, ensuring that you understand why a legislator would care about what it is you that you care about, and how to come in a very educated, informed way to explain your side, and an understanding that there might be an opposition too, and to be able to talk about that as well. Drew talked about building relationships, not building the relationship for something that you want to do, but building the relationship for the sake of building the relationship. And then when you do need to be able to reach out to that legislator or staff, it's easier to do because you have that relationship with either the legislator or somebody in their orbit. John, telling the story is, you hear more and more about that in general when you are looking to persuade, when you're looking to teach, when you're looking to explain. Telling stories are much more palatable than reading from a script or just trying to give it to somebody in bullet points. Telling the stories that are meaningful to them and speak to their motivations are incredibly important. And so, and lastly, the comment that a doctor sees the network as important as a scalpel is just mind-blowing. But also, I can see where that is very, very true. And when we talk about, actionable advocacy to make smart investments in broadband technologies that support all of these things that we've been talking about, it helps drive North Carolina's economy to new heights and things that we've all been wanting to do for our state. The same is true for telemedicine, which is integral for expanding access to telehealth care, improving patient outcomes, and modernizing the system as a whole. Just as digging wells today ensures that we have water tomorrow, proactive advocacy secures a healthier and more prosperous future for us all. Thank you for joining me today. I can't tell you enough about the notes that I've taken throughout this call, but I'd like to ask each of you for 1 minute as a final thought or closing thought for our audience today. And Drew, I'll start with you.
Real quickly, advocacy is not something you should be afraid of. It's something that is, again, the legislature and other elected officials, whether locally, state, federal, they need to hear from the constituents. They want to hear from the constituents. They also want information so that they're making the right decision, that they can sleep well at night, having known that they pushed the right button. So making sure that you are engaged is something that is really helpful. But again, we also stand ready to help and assist in making sure that the message that you're delivering is the message that might resonate the best with the elected official. And that's why we're here. That's why we're engaged. And it's an opportunity to make sure that whenever you do reach out, that you're the most effective.
Excellent advice. John?
I think for me, the most important thing is aligning the advocacy with what we know is important, and then operating subject to that alignment. The second thing I would say is just to reiterate something that I said earlier, which is advocacy is something that is not only possible by everyone, but it's something that's incumbent upon us as citizens of the United States.
Thank you. And Jordan?
Yeah, I think two kind of things come to mind for the final thought. One is that, I've been living by this mantra as well for the last 6 or so months. Again, I was hired to do marketing. So don't limit yourself. You can do anything with good preparation, research, and great partners beside you, like you all here on this call today. And second, a fantastic piece of knowledge from one of the best CMOs, Jim Nestor from MCNC. He taught me something when I was preparing with him for my first few legislative meetings: be brief, be brilliant, be gone. And I sort of want that to be just my legacy as a whole throughout my professional career, but also throughout our time with legislators. They are dealing with so much beyond our world, and they're trying their best. They are people too. So be brief, be brilliant, and be gone, and do it all for those that we serve.
Thank you. Once again, I appreciate all of you being here today and sharing your insights. As MCNC celebrates 45 years of transformation this year, I look forward to continuing our work together and resuming this conversation in November at MCNC's Community Day. Everything we do, it all adds up to meaningful progress for North Carolina. Thank you for joining us on MCNC Community Connect. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts now available online and plan to join us again soon for our next discussion featuring technology leaders and innovators across North Carolina and the nation. You can listen to all episodes of MCNC Community Connect now on MCNC.org, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.